Good morning. Okay. The last thing we talked about last week was the Mahalich of Rabbi Yochanan Wasserman on this question of Emuna. Specifically, Rabbi Yochanan argued that anybody who is reasonable and honest in their search will, in fact, come to the correct conclusion that God exists and that the Torah is true and the like. And when people don't come to that conclusion, so it's because they weren't entirely honest in their search. They may not intentionally be deceiving themselves, but ultimately they are at fault. The Gemara, for example, says that Klal Yisrael were Oved Avodah Zarah, Kedei Lahatir Arayos B'Farhesia, meaning to say the true, perhaps subconscious motivation of people in serving idolatry was not necessarily the theology was appealing. Oftentimes, the theories, the intellectual theories we come up with, aren't a reflection of a true and honest search for the truth, but the opposite. They are the justifications that we come up with to support the conclusions that we wish to reach. And we are full of negios. A person, therefore, who honestly searches, whether it's a 12-year-old girl or a great philosopher, will always, HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the world where they will come to the truth. And when they don't, so they're subject to shochad. It's a reflection that they succumb to that shochad, and therefore they're held accountable for those beliefs. But fundamentally, in the event that a person subscribes to a false belief, but that belief wasn't something that they could have known better, then they're not held accountable for those false beliefs. And that's the concept of Tinok Shenishba. The Tinok Shenishba, though he believes in a heretical belief, he's denying the Tarsha Baal Peh, however, he's not held accountable for that. And the reason is because he is, because it's not his fault. This is the way he was educated, and that's why he believes what he believes. So the last question that we concluded with was whether or not that concept is something that's still shy of Kuzman Hazeh. So I'm passing out today's sheets, and the first couple sources are thinkers who perhaps wondered whether Rabbi Yochanan's Mahalich is still true. Still true meaning to say in the practical sense. In the sense that nowadays we live in a world where the majority of, at least the intelligentsia, don't believe in God, and perhaps it's no longer reasonable to claim that someone who honestly searches will come to the truth. The first quote here is from Rav Amital. I believe that Rabbi Wasserman's explanations do not suffice. Many people come to a secular outlook not in order to satisfy their desires, but rather because of their dedication to ideals that may at times even demand great sacrifice. It is difficult to pin all belief on following after one's desires. There's no doubt that people have been moser nefesh, literally, for kfira. And can you just say that's because they were searching after their desires? Would have been easier for them to simply reject their kfira, and life would have been easier. Perhaps along similar lines, here's a quote from Rav Lichtenstein. Rav Yochanan Wasserman said that faith in God is simple and easy. However, the Yetzer Hara interferes and keeps man from worshiping God. I do not accept these words. Firstly, to my mind, that is factually untrue. Secondly, this argument is somewhat insulting. It argues that were it not for bad urges, others too would aspire to faith. True that our natural senses may bring a person to believe, but to argue that it is easy and simple were it not for our urges, I cannot agree with that. A certain effort is required for one to arrive at belief. The concept of faith is complex. Specifically, one cannot give one answer that one can say with certainty that it will convince every denier. Now, just to, I guess, be a little fair to Rabbi Yochanan was not at all saying that it's easy. I think Rabbi Yochanan would acknowledge that at times it is extraordinarily difficult to go ahead and to overcome one's negios is something that takes incredible tenacity and perseverance. Fighting with the Yetzer Hara in every respect is something exceedingly difficult. So I don't think that Rabbi Yochanan is claiming that it's easy. For those who struggle with it, is exceedingly difficult. What Rabbi Yochanan is saying, though, is that it's possible. That it's possible. Now, what might someone respond to, let's say, with Amital's challenge? So, you could of course accept that he's correct, but what would Rabbi Yochanan perhaps say? I saw recently an article which was published on the New York Times website by Dr. Alvin Plantiga, who was asked this question as well. And I thought it was somewhat interesting that he argued, he made the same case as Rabbi Yochanan. He says, given contemporary science and philosophy, Rabbi Yochanan's argument is still correct. He didn't quote Rabbi Yochanan, but this is the third source on today's sheets. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't have any special knowledge here. Still, there are some possible explanations. In other words, his question that he was answering here is, why would anybody be a heretic if such compelling proof can be found for God's existence? Thomas Nagel, a terrific philosopher and an unusually perceptive atheist, says he simply doesn't want there to be any such person as God. And it isn't hard to see why. For one thing, there would be what some would think an intolerable invasion of privacy. God knows what my every thought long before I thought it. For another, my actions and even my thoughts would be a constant subject of judgment and evaluation. Basically, these come down to serious limitation of human autonomy posed by theism. This desire for autonomy can reach very substantial proportions, as with the German philosopher Heidegger, who, according to Richard Rorty, felt guilty for living in a universe he had not himself created. Now there's a tender conscience. But even a less monumental desire for autonomy can perhaps also motivate atheism. So I'm not here to be machria, but it is interesting that at least there are contemporary thinkers, even non-Jewish thinkers, who have essentially made the argument. And of course, as we all know, when we have to make any decision, it's one of the hardest things is to figure out and understand our own thought process and what's motivating us and dealing with our own negios and trying to understand what's causing us to think certain things and do certain things. And that really is at the heart of this discussion. Two minor aros before we go on to the next point on this topic, and then I'll take your question. Number one is a quote, I think we might have even mentioned this earlier. It's the next quote that you have over here from the Ramban in the Sakdama to Sefer Iyov. And I think it's a very interesting point because it highlights what Ramban thinks is the true source of Kfira. Ramban here, in his Akdama to Iyov, of course, is discussing the struggle that Iyov goes through. V'yesh davar mach'iv ha'levavos u'mad'iv ha'machshavos. The Ramban, like in many of his introductions, is writing in poetry, in the rhyme. Mimenu levado nimshechu kol hadoros l'kfira gemura, v'hu ha'reos ba'olam mishpat me'ukal v'tzadik v'ralo rasha v'tovlo. Zeshorish hameri b'chol hamordim mikol uma v'lashon. Very powerful language. Mimenu levado. Meaning to say the Ramban knows that the arguments in favor of heresy are usually not rooted in the argument of evil, certainly not in the formal sense. People have all sorts of questions and proofs and philosophical arguments and the like. So the Ramban here is saying what's really troubling people is not always perhaps what they're aware of, or certainly not the argument that they're making. It's their witnessing injustice and witnessing or experiencing suffering. And that is at the heart of their kfira. It's not the same point that Rabbi Chanan's making. It's not, or Plantiga, that people are looking for freedom, autonomy. They wish to justify their behavior, but rather a different problem, but also not necessarily the problem that they're stating. Now, a lot of times when you talk to people about emunah issues that they might have, you'll get the impression that really what's bothering them isn't necessarily the questions that they're asking, but there's something much more deep-seated than this. And it's coming, especially when you're dealing with people who are coming from within the faith, they're coming from a frum family or frum community, and they have these questions, you oftentimes get the impression that that's not really what's behind this. At the same time, especially if you're not a psychologist, you're not necessarily going to be able to solve those problems, but it's important to be able to address the questions that they're asking, even if the questions that they're asking aren't at the root of their problem. And as such, as I mentioned in the email I sent you last night, we're having a Yom Iyun, not next week. Next week is the Bechina, but in 2 weeks on this topic with, I certainly imagine as future Rabbanim and Mechanchim, or even if not, you're going to be asked these questions all the time. I think it's an exciting opportunity to hear from really some of the world's experts on how to answer these types of questions. So as I emailed you, if there are specific issues you'd like them to discuss, if you could email them to me. One last minor ha'ara on Rabbi Chanan, which is, you could ask whether Rabbi Chanan's theory applies to all Yud Gimel Yikar Yemuna, meaning to say, why should my taiva for whatever I misave for trigger belief in corporeality, right? I understand why it might cause a rejection of Torah, because Torah imposes a great deal of restrictions on me. But Torah imposes those restrictions regardless of whether God is a corporeal or incorporeal. So Rabbi Chanan, I think, answers this question. And he says that, first of all, he certainly says that the search for the truth will not just yield belief in God's existence, but in the veracity of Torah. And once someone arrives at the veracity of the Torah, so then belief in all of the Ikari Amuna follow. But at the same time, he acknowledges that there are certain things, that certain beliefs that a person isn't faulted for. Again, whatever qualifies as Tinok Shenishba, and it certainly may be the case that what is considered Tinok Shenishba in today's day and age is different than what it once was. And I'd like to, in just a couple of minutes, expand on the idea of Tinok Shenishba, but let me just take your question.
I mean, you slightly addressed it, but why is it only matters of fate that one psychological well-being, whatever, is affecting knowledge? I mean, why can't we say to all areas, any rejection of science as well, would also be some
for sure, it's true. Meaning to say, just as there are subconscious motivations to reject religion, there are also subconscious motivations to embrace religion. You know, living in a world without any meaning or direction is also something that's psychologically challenging. So I'm not saying that this is the only thing that people think. And obviously it's complex. The point that Rabbi Chanan is making is that in the end of the day, we have the ability. You could also argue that a person can't really get past those, even if Rabbi Chanan is right, that it's these subconscious factors that are driving his beliefs. That's something that a human being can't get past. So Rabbi Chanan is saying that both of them are possible to overcome. Number one, that it is the subconscious motivations that drive people to heresy. And number two is that a human being, for the most part, has the ability to overcome those subconscious desires. And if he really, really works hard and tries to apprehend the truth, he'll succeed.
Right. When it comes to something like mathematics, like 2 + 2 = 5, nobody in their right mind would ever be able to convince themselves.
Correct. Right. Something like this is obviously much less concrete, like we've discussed. You know, you can't offer a argument for God's existence that's so clear-cut that it can't be debated. That's and perhaps that has to be the case to allow for Bechira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in which his existence is hidden, and that perhaps we could arrive at belief in his existence with work, but that it's not something that's automatic.
But I can't seem to find the words about the Chana. Do we have them in
that? Yeah, it was in the last sheet, last week's sheet. It says something like Bir Agados al Derech HaPshat, the final source. Last week's sheet. Okay. Yeah.
So the Chana is saying that psychological desire for there not to be a God is stronger than psychological desire to be a God, and that's why
that for some people at some time, you know, there everybody has their own Yetzer Hara.
Right.
Some people don't struggle with belief in God. It comes totally naturally for them. They have their different Yetzer Haras. But many people do struggle with Kfira. That's their struggle with it. And for them, there's a very strong desire to again deny some aspect of belief.
How can you say which one is dictating which way you're going to go? Unless you assume one of them is stronger than the other one.
A person has Bechira. I guess we didn't do the sugya of Bechira yet.
How can you say that? Okay, without deciding that the psychological factors are pushing you in one direction and they're not pushing you.
His argument is you should read the piece. His argument is he shows. Look, if you're objective and honest and straightforward, it's so compelling that there must be a God that how could it be that anybody denies it? And the answer, he says, and this is really what Chazal are saying, is that it's not always the intellectual arguments that motivate a person, even when a person thinks it's the intellectual arguments. It's their subconscious desires, in this case for autonomy and the like.
Right. It's very hard to prove that that's the case unless you
can't prove it. You can't prove anything. But the question is, does it seem to be correct? Is it compelling? Is it a more reasonable explanation? But read what he says. I think it's a very powerful piece. Yes?
How did we answer the last question that we posed as to whether Rabbi Chanan's shot goes according to all the Gemara Karin?
Because if it leads to, once you believe, so first of all, number one is once you, it brings you to belief in Torah, so then Torah indicates the veracity of all the Yud Gimel Ikar Emunah. Number two is he acknowledges that there are things that it won't necessarily lead to, and about anything in that category, you're excused, and that's the concept of Tinok Shenishba.
So Tinok Shenishba only applies to those.
Tinok Shenishba applies with respect to Ikarim that their denial is excusable, because not necessarily the case that we could say you should have known better. And about things that we believe that you should have known better, so then we don't apply the principle of Tinok Shenishba. Yes?
The Ramban explanation, the Ramban's explanation, and Rav Chanan, are they necessarily in conflict?
No, of course not. They're just pointing to two different types of psychological motivations that are behind people's arguments.
You're saying we take the Ramban literally, levado.
I don't think so. Let's go on. The next topic I want to discuss a little bit is the Chazon Ish. And we're not going to talk about it too much, because there are a bunch of things I want to do today. I gave you a number of quotes here that you should look at where you could see these points made. The Chazon Ish also seems to reject the conventional understanding of Reb Chaim, and he proves it from the concept of Tinok Shenishba, the concept being that anyone who... And what's interesting, I think, is that he gives an earlier sources might say this as well, but it's more clear-cut here, a very specific halachic hagdara, which is that a person is a tinok shenishba because if you were to make... You know, if he was exposed to the truth, he would accept those arguments and he would be believed. And the lack of belief stems from lack of exposure to the truth, to those arguments. And as such, and he acknowledges that the shear of this is not so clear-cut, but as such, a person, as long as it is the case that if they were exposed to the truth, they would believe... So then they could still be a Tinok Shenishba. But once you've done a certain amount of hishtadlus and they still don't believe, so then they can no longer be classified as a Tinok Shenishba. So perhaps most non-observant Jews today would have the status of Tinok Shenishba. And accordingly... You're not only don't we kill them, but we're obligated to love them. The Chazon Ish, by the way, also shows how the Rambam's concept of Tinok Shenishba with respect to Karaim emerges from the Gemara and is really Mochrach. The next point, and again, there's a number of interesting nuances worth looking at here. The next point I wanted to talk about is those who disagree with the Rambam, meaning to say, those who maintain that disbelief based upon faulty reasoning does not constitute heresy. So first and foremost, we've already seen the position of the Ravid. The Ravid writes, why is he called the corporealist a min? After all, he came to his position based off his understanding of psukim, literal reading of psukim, and especially agados hamishabshos es hadas. I'd like to look at some other thinkers who disagree with the Rambam and the arguments that they make. So we'll begin with a Radvaz, which is on the top, towards the top of page 2. The Radvaz here is dealing with the question of how to deal with a certain preacher who publicly taught that Moshe was divine in some sense. So he writes... V'lo matzasi tam lepotro min ha'onesh. Right, he is mamish teaching kfira gemura. Exulas mipnei shehu toa bi'iyuno v'takanaso kilkalto. In other words, lemaisa, he erred in his thinking, and what should have brought him to a better understanding of the truth, in fact, messed him up. V'lo adif haim emisha toa be'achad meikari hadas, machmas iuno hanifsad shelo nikra b'shvil zeh kofer. And he's no different than anyone who's made a mistake about fundamental religious principles because he's misunderstood the sources, we don't call such a person a kofer. Vare Hillel, Haya Adam Gadol v'ta'a be'achad me'ikar yadas, she'amar ein Mashiach li'Yisrael shekvar achluhu b'meches kiyahu. And look at an example of this. Hillel, again, not Hillel Zaken, but Hillel Sheni, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Tzadi Ches, tells us that Rabbi Hillel Omer, Ein Mashiach Yisrael Shekvar Achlu B'Yamei Chizkiyahu. What does that mean? Rashi there explains, Ein Mashiach Yisrael, Shechizkiyah Haya Mashiach, Ve'alav Namru Kol HaNevuos, Atzmiach Keren Ludeis Yisrael, Ve'amad Ve'ra'ah Be'oz Hashem. In other words, the psukim describing the Mashiach and the prophets were describing Chizkiyahu. So the psukim in Yeshayahu, for example, aren't describing a future redeemer, but one who's already died. Now, by the way, it doesn't mean that Hillel didn't believe in the messianic era in the sense of kibbutz galios and universal peace and awareness of God and the like. Those are explicit psukim. Take a look in Parshas Nitzavim. It was with respect to the individual described in the prophets. But one way or the other, his belief would constitute heresy. And clearly he wasn't a heretic. Otherwise we wouldn't quote him in the Gemara. So that teaches us that if somebody comes to a false belief based off of their misunderstanding of the Torah, they're not considered a heretic. Umipnei zatos lo chashvuhu kofer chas v'shalom. His kfir stems from his belief that his analysis was correct. So too this preacher, toa biyunohu, and therefore he shouldn't be punished. Essentially, just like every other area in Halacha, where we say onus rachmana patre, here too. And along similar lines, the Sefer Ikrim, Rav Yosef Albo, makes a similar argument in the next source to justify many of the Chachamim who have made major theological errors. The way he puts it is, Lamed Chus al Chachme Israel Hamidabim Bezev Kiyotse Bo. In another source, in 2:16, the Ikrim doesn't necessarily apply this to all beliefs, but let's read what he says over here. Avalmi Shehu Machzik Betoras Moshe Umamin Bikareha. Ukshaba lachkor al zeh mitzad haseichel vehavanas hapsukim, hitahu ha'iyun lomar, she'achad min ha'ikarim hu al derech acheres, velo kefi hamuvan betchilas hadas, o hitahu ha'iyun lahakchish ha'ikar, ha'hu li'oso choshev she'eno das, bari, tachriach ha'tore lahamino, o yachshov, ba'mez shehu ikar she'enenu ikar, v'yamin oso, Kasher Haemunos Shebo Bitor Shaina Mikarim. Oh Yamin Ezu Amuna Binais Minise Atora Lios Hoshev Shainanu Makhish Bezesh Shum Amuna Minamunos Shiyuyov Hait Lahamin Mitara Torah. Ainzekofer. All these things, all these beliefs are not, does not make a person a kofer. Aval, Ubuchal Chachma Yisrael v'chasidehem. So perhaps he does need some type of kapara. He is a chote, but he's a chote b'shogeg. So when you're Michal Shabbos b'shogeg, you need kapara. Perhaps this indicates that he fundamentally is rejecting Rabbi Ochanan. Meaning to say that he's not ones. It's a discussion, but the pasha pshat is you don't need a kapara for ones. It's a chakira, whether it is a chaloshe mavera or not, Rabbi Chanan, Rabbi Kiv Eger's famous tshuva. But the point is that he is not the Sefer Ikrim is not even claiming that he is ones. He's a shogeg. There is some degree of negligence, and therefore he does need some degree of kapara. But you're a shogeg, and therefore you're not a kofer. Therefore you're not a kofer. So, as opposed to, let's say, the mahalich that Rabbi Chanan takes in the Rambam, which is that when the kfirah comes from a degree of negligence, then he's a kofer, because he could have known better. What the Sefer Ikrim is saying is, look, maybe that's even true. He could have known better. But usually we don't say that makes a person a mazid. We say that makes a person a shogeg, when there's negligence but no conscious intent to violate. So you're a shogeg. You need kapara, but that doesn't make you a mazid. And that's exactly what the Sefer Ikrim is saying over here. Yes?
Maybe they're not really necessarily arguing, it's just that it would depend on why the person is making a mistake. In other words, the Chana, if it's coming from the desire, then that makes you a Chayfer, versus according to the Ikrim, he's talking about someone who makes a mistake in Shiva.
It's possible. That's correct. But again, the Sefer Ikrim, I think, does imply that there is negligence here. In other words, it's not that. Now, you could say, yeah, there's a difference between negligence because you're lazy and negligence because you're overcome by your desires. But I think the pashup shot is that there is a machlokas over here. I think Rabbi Chanan's interpretation of the Rambam is quite compelling within the view of the Rambam, as we saw from those quotes last week. But I do think the pashup shot is that there are many thinkers who disagree with the Rambam about this. And the next quote that follows, we're not going to read it because I want to go on to the next topic, but Rav Kook writes that we don't paskin like the Rambam about these matters. We paskin like the Sefer HaYikrim. The context here is there were a number of people who attacked Rav Moshe Glasner for support of Zionism. So Rav Kook, in this quote, defends him. And he basically tells those people that are attacking him, he says, look, even if you're right that he's wrong, that he's making a big mistake, but he's no worse than an accidental heretic who we don't consider a heretic. And he quotes the Sefer HaYikrim. So I think that's very important. So, you know, last 2 weeks we were discussing the Rambam Shita, but what we're seeing now is that it seems that not everybody agrees with the Rambam. We saw that even the Rambam's position isn't so clear, because he does have this category of Tinok Shenishba. If you take our understanding of the Rambam, the difference between, let's say, the Rambam and the Ikrim is much smaller. I still think, though, there is a disagreement, though it's smaller than what would seem at first. Minor point, but I do think this is interesting source. I think we actually referred to this a little bit ago, but I'd like to come back to it here. Thus far we've been focusing on Jews. What about non-Jews? So clearly, the Torah expects non-Jews to believe in God and to reject polytheism. Avodah Zarah is one of the Shavah Mitzvos B'nai Noach, and the halacha is that a guy who's over to Avodah Zarah is Chayef Misa. But how is the non-Jew supposed to know that idolatry is wrong? And what if he sincerely errs? So the Gemara Bava Kama says about a similar point that the Aftzadi Beis Amud Aleph, the end of Hachovel, Mikan lebenerag ben Noach shenerag shahayilo lilmod velo lamad. The context here is what Avimelech did, but it's a basic principle, which is that a ben Noach is chayiv misa because hayelo lomod velo lamad, meaning to say he's negligent. Avimelech surely did not think Sarah was an Eishes Ish. He genuinely believed that she was Avram's sister. But at the same time, he's faulted because Hayelo Lomod Velo Lamad. He should have known better. He could have known better. and as such, he's held accountable. The Rambam writes, you have it over here from Perek Malachim, Perek Yud Halacha Aleph, that is why, generally speaking, Bnei Noach are killed for, executed for shogeg. That, take a look, Bnei Noach sheshagag, Bnei Noach sheshagag be'achad me'mitzvos av pater miklum. So Ben Noach is pater from Misef Yishogeg, Bamed Ramamur and Bishagog Be'achas Mimitzvos Ve'avar below Kavana. So if he accidentally violates it, Kigon Sheba'al, Eishes Chavero, Vedima, Sheishto, O Penuya, Avalim Yadashu Eishes Chavero, Velo Yadashi Yasuralov. Let's say a guy has an affair with a married woman, but he didn't realize that that's the wrong thing to do. Alal Alibo, Shedavar Zemoterlo. V'chein im harag. V'hu lo yada she'asir la'arog. Nobody ever told him. Harei ze karov l'meizid v'nerag. V'lo techashev zu lahem shkaga. Mepnei shay lo lomod v'lo lamad. In other words, the Rambam learns from that yisod in Bava Kama that hay lo lomod v'lo lamad applies to all sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach. That a guy is held accountable for all Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach because he should have realized and he could have realized that they're wrong. Now, this relates to the Rambam's general principle that the Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach are things that a person, that humans are capable of independently discovering, and therefore there is no excuse if they say, well, nobody ever told me. That's the Rambam in the previous parak, the next source. Al Shisha Dvar Nitzdavu Adam Arishon, Alvadazar, Abdulkar Sashem, Valshvichostamim, Valgiliarios, Valgazov, Aldinim, Afal Pisha Kulanhein Kabbalah bi Yadenu mi Moshe Rabbeinu. How do we know what the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach are? A Kabbalah from Moshe. But the Rambam also writes, Vadas Nota Lahen. So these are things, these are concepts that the intellect lends itself to accept, which means that a person is capable of figuring out on his own. And that's what the Rambam's saying. It's a very fascinating discussion in the Rambam. Rambam makes a distinction between Chasidei Umos HaOlam and Chachmei Umos HaOlam. Chachmei Umos HaOlam are non-Jews who observe the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach because they understand and realize that they are correct, they are true. Chasidei Umos HaOlam are those who observe the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach because they believe that God instructed these things. The simple reading of the correct gears of the Rambam, there's incorrect gears, but the simple reading of the correct gears of the Rambam is both of them have a chelek in Olam Haba. There's an interesting question, who's better, the Chacham or the Chassid? Rav Kook has a letter about this. Is it better, you know, which guy has a greater chelek in Olam Haba? The one who does what's right because he understands that it's right, or the person who does what's right because God commanded him to do it? Not our topic now. What? I'm sorry? Okay, that's part of it. The Rambam doesn't think that necessarily relates to things that are rational. The Rambam in Shmona Prakim says that's talking about chukim. I'm sorry?
How are non-Jews supposed to find out?
There's an interesting, Rabbi Charlap has an article, it's about a while back in the Torah Mada journal, in which he quotes a machlokas between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson about this point. John Adams says that we know about all morality through the Jews. And Jefferson says, no, we figured it out on our own. So anyway, it's an interesting discussion. But as I said, the Pashup Shat and the Rambam is, they're both fine. Chasidei Umos HaOlam are good people, and have a chelek in Olam Haba, and Chachmei Umos HaOlam are good people, and have a chelek in Olam Haba. Whereas someone who doesn't keep the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach is someone who is held accountable for that mistake because Hayelo Lomod, the Lo Lomod. That's the Mahalik of the Rambam. Now, there's an interesting Abar Benel who really deals with what I would say we could call the issue of Tinok Shenishba among Gayim, and the question of whether that could even hold true with respect to Avodah Zarah. And I think that one place, one very fascinating pasuk where you see this issue come up is a pasuk, a hard pasuk to understand actually. Your next source, Pentisa Inacha Shamaima, Verisa Sashemesh Vesarech Vesakochavim, Kotzva Shamaim, Vinidachta Vistachavisa Lahem, Vavadetam, Asher Chalak Hashem Elokecha Osam, L'chol Hamim Tachas Kol Hashemayim. So Hashem here is, of course, warning the Jews against idolatry. You look up and you see the celestial bodies. You stray and you serve them. That's, of course, a terrible thing to do. And the Rambam writes, these are Asher Chalak, the Pasuk says, sorry, Asher Chalak Hashem Elokecha Osam, L'chol Hamim. So what is meant by Asher Chalak Hashem Elokecha Osam, L'chol Hamim? So that's not so clear. What does it mean? Does that mean that that it's okay for Gayim to serve Avodah Zarah, to serve these celestial bodies? So none of the standard explanations of the Pesukim understand it that way. The Rambam discusses this Pasuk in Perk Beis of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. The Rashbam, if you look at the Mefarshim, they all explain the Pasuk in such a way that, again, now is not the time to go into it, but in a way that it doesn't imply any type of allowances. Asher Chalak, Hashem Elokecha Osam might refer to these celestial bodies were created to illuminate the world, or maybe even created to mislead the non-Jews. The Ramban, which you have over here, has a very fascinating idea. He understands that, in a sense, it does reflect a degree of reality, meaning to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu governs the non-Jews through a tsar, through some type of angel, a national angel, and each of the Umos HaOlam has this tsar. Not that they're allowed to serve the tsar, but the point that the Pasuk is saying is that there's a lower level of hashgacha to non-Jews. They are in a sense, tachas kol ha-shamayim, whereas Jews are not under a tsar, but under the direct stewardship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Yaakov sees in his dreams. But again, it in no way implies any sense of legitimacy. So there's a very fascinating Abar Benel on Yonah that I came across. And he understands that this pasuk is referring to a certain type of forbearance, at the very least, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows for non-Jews in the realm of idolatry when it is the case that they didn't know better. The context of this is his Mahalich of the Book of Yonah. At the end of the Book of Yonah, as you remember, Yonah objects to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision to spare the city, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu criticizes Yonah, and he says, look, you had pity on the gourd, something that you didn't work on, and just came up in one day and disappeared, and you expect me not to have pity on the city of Nineveh, where there are so many people that don't know the difference between their right and their left. So what in the world does that mean? They don't know the difference between their right and their left. So there are different explanations. Rashi, for example, in Radak says it's referring to the children. How could he have destroyed the city of Nineveh? After all, what about the children in Nineveh? It's not really, they shouldn't have known better. So therefore, you should have had compassion on them. But Abarbanel says that it's referring to the adults who, to some degree, shouldn't have known better. And meaning to say, there's an interesting debate also in the Rishonim whether the inhabitants of Nineveh were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. The Ibn Ezra assumes they weren't. That's how he interprets the pasuk Ir Gdola Lelokim. But the Abarbanel assumes, he makes a number of arguments, that they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But still, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Yonah that the reason why he spared them is Lo Yadam Bein Miminam L'Smolam, meaning to say that that it's not really their fault. So what do I hold them accountable for? Their immorality. Abarbanel notes that generally speaking, especially out of Eretz Yisrael, but generally speaking, when you see examples of HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervening for Goyim, it's not about Avodah Zarah, it's about immorality, because that is inexcusable. So, whereas Avodah Zarah is inexcusable for Jews, it is, at the very least, less inexcusable for non-Jews, whereas immorality is something that is inexcusable for non-Jews. We'll take a look at some of these quotes. Yada ben yimino l'smola uveimar abba, shelo amar ze al atinokos kedivrei amifarshim, like Rashi and Radak say, kihine be'ir hanidachas. Look, it's an interesting question, because we see that that's not a good time to look at ir hanidachas. Avilachein binyan avodah zarah, lo yadu ben yiminim l'smolam. So what it means is, with respect to avodah zarah, that's how he explains a continuation of the pasuk kebehema rabba. In other words, they're like animals; they're not at fault. Amni Yisrael sha'amdu al Har Sinai v'nitzdavu al avodah zarah v'shamu mepiagvura lo yia l'cha le'elohim achirim. The Jews have no excuse; they should have known better. V'lachein ninve lo nischayvu kloya mifas emunaseihem b'mesh lo nitzdavu alav. And that's how, if you look in two quotes later, that's how he understands that pasuk from Dvarim. Vim tomar shem ovdim avodah zarah v'shelo shavu mimena hinei hem kidmus balei chayim bilti medabrim ki acharei she'en lahem Torah v'lo nitzdavu ba v'chalak Hashem tzva shamayim l'chol ha'amim u'mepnei zeh ein ra'ui she'ye'anshu aleha. So he says basically that Hashem doesn't punish non-Jews, at least some of the time, for being Ovid Avodah Zarah, because they shouldn't have known better. And that's the meaning of this pasuk, Asher Chalak Hashem Elokecha Osam L'chol Ha'amim. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about, at least very quickly, just sort of to round off, I guess two more things to round up this discussion. One is a little bit more of an elaboration on the concept of Tinok Shenishba, something that we've referred to a number of times. So the context of this idea in the top of page, towards the top of page 3, the Gemara on Shabbos, Klal Gadol Amru B'Shabbos, is in the context of bringing Karban Achatas, Klal Shochech Eker Shabbos, V'asim Alachos Harbe, B'Shabbos Os Harbe, Enu Chayv Alachas Ketzad. So how could you have a situation of Shochech Iker Shabbos, not knowing the concept of Shabbos? Tinok Shenishba Levein Anachrim. That's an example. Gershon's Gar Ben Anachrim is also a very interesting one, what that could possibly mean, but not for now. So the Rambam writes, as we've seen, this applies to the second, third generation Karaites. They're certainly denying one of the Yud Gimel Ikar Emuna. Right, if you look, v'chein perusha mekubal, gam hu mepi hanevua, hagvura, v'zeh she'anu osim hayom tzuras sukkah, v'lula, v'shofar, v'atitzes, v'atfilin, v'zulasam, hi atzma tzura she'amar Hashem l'moshe, v'amar l'hu, v'hu rak movil shlichus neman pamesh evi. Right, so what we know about these things is directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, the Chachamim throughout the Doros are the Shaliach. And they who deny these perushim ha-mekubalim are absolute kofrim. But yet the Rambam writes, next source, well, so there he reiterates it, the Rambam writes where he says, Hilchos Mamrim, Bamedva Mamurim be Isha Kafar Batar Shebal Pah, Bimakshavto, Uvidvarm Shinirulo, Falachachar, Daito Akala, Vachashir Slibo, as we said before last week, that the kofar is a kofar because he's holy chachashir slibo. Aval b'nei toim ha'ela v'nei v'neihem shedichu osam avosam v'noldu b'en ha'karayim v'godlu osam al da'atam harehu ketinok shenishba b'neihem v'gidlu v'eno zariz lechos b'dayto b'darkei mitzvah sharehu ke'anos v'af al pi shesham achar kach sh'yehudi v'ra yehudim medasam harehu ke'anos sharehu gidluhu al ta'usam. There's a debate about what the Rambam actually means here. It relates to that line that we talked about a couple of weeks ago when he says, "Lo mimayrin lahargam." There are those, like the Radvaz, who thought that the Karaites, by the time his generation came along, were no longer Tinoko Shinishba, and they understand the concept of Tinoko Shinishba very narrowly. But the Pashup Shad is that the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah both accept, this is in a number of places, the more expansive approach of Tinok Shenishba, as opposed to the Radvaz's more narrow approach. The Shach sounds like he accepts the Radvaz's Mahalich. There's a tshuva from Rav Moshe, he also sounds like he accepts the Mahalich of the Radvaz. But at the same time, Rav Moshe also, not sure how to shtim this, assumes that, let's say he's talking about contemporary conservative Jews, do have the status of Tinok Shenishba, and therefore should be treated as such. One of the first, I guess, contemporary thinkers to apply the concept of Tinok Shenishba to modern day Jews who reject belief is Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, the Aruch Lener, the Binyan Sion. In his tshuva in the Binyan Sion, which you have over here, he actually has three tzadim lahakel to sort of justify why the modern day, Reform Jews, and again, he lived from 1798 to 1871. He was, among other things, the Rebbe of Rav Hirsch. Poshe Yisrael shebizmanenu lo yadanu ma'adun lahem. Acha shebavonosenu arabim pashta habaheres larov. Ad shebirubam chil shabbos nasa kehater. V'gam umagam bibanehem asher kamu tachtehem asher lo yadu v'lo shamu Dine Shabbos, Shedomin Mamish Letzedukin Delo Nachshavu Kimumarim Afal Pish Machal and Shabbos Mipnei Shemaisav Usein Biadeim Vein Ketinok Shenishbal Vein Ovdei Kolchavim. In fact, he has other Aterim. He says that even though the Machal Shabbos for Hesia, maybe it's Omer Mutter, maybe you see that many of them, even though they do Malacha, but they fundamentally believe in the concept of Shabbos. They might go to Shul. It's true they drive to Shul, but they go to Shul. They might have a family meal on Shabbos. So that's part of his discussion. Other thinkers, Rav Cook here, and here I have a letter also from the Meshul Chachma, both who discuss this. The final point, the last point, I guess we're just going to do very quickly. A number of you asked who it was that the Ravid was referring to when he said there are gdola mimenu who believed in the corporeality of God. So the short answer is we don't know. There have been all sorts of theories suggested. If you look at Dr. Shapiro's book, he has a number of people who he thinks he counts as corporealists. I think many of his examples are highly questionable. The most, perhaps the best example that he has is someone named Rav Moshe Taku. But even Rav Moshe Taku is very obscure. He's definitely railing against the Rambam's approach to anthropomorphism, but he doesn't in any way say, explicitly at the very least, that God can have a physical body. Ravan Lapiansky has an article actually about this point in the journal Dialogue, entitled The Corporeality That Never Was, where he argues that there really is no evidence that Rav Moshe Taku was a corporealist. Even if we accept that he was, I think the three top contenders that we could come up with, all of which are highly debatable, are Rav Moshe Taku, Rav Shlomo Simcha of Troy, and Rabbi Avram ben Azriel. And all of them are highly debatable at best. Maybe Rav Daniel HaBavli in his correspondence with Rabbi Avram ben Arambam. That's probably not who the Ravid was referring to. Either way, now, most of those people that you've never heard of before, what about, is there anybody that we've heard of? Maybe the Ravid was referring to Rashi. I don't think that there's any evidence for that, and Adirab, I think there's a lot of evidence against it. Rashi, in a number of places, does argue against corporeality. Take a look, for example, at Shmos Tes Vav Pasuk Vav, or Yud Tes Yud Ches, or Lamed Aleph Yud Zayin, or Chaf Yud Aleph. That's just from Sefer Shmos. Now, there are many places where, when you read Rashi, he does seem to be referred to God in some forms of physical terms, but that's because Rashi is explaining the Psukim, and the Psukim do that. Rashi in his Hakdama to Shir HaShirim makes this point explicitly. Rashi writes that Shir HaShirim is a mashal, it's a metaphor, but, you know, my job as a mefaresh is to explain the Psukim. When Rashi's explaining the Psukim, so it doesn't mean that he thinks that Shir HaShirim is a love poem. He tells you at the beginning, it's a mashal. But as a mefaresh, as a commentator on the Psukim, his job is not to address philosophical questions, it's to explain what the Psukim mean. And therefore, every time there's an anthropomorphism, Rashi's job is not to say, we shouldn't understand this literally, it's to explain the Psukim, right? There's a place in, again, we don't have time. A lot of the places that are cited, which are evidence, I really don't think are evidence. Rashi in Shmos Zion Dalet, where he says Yad Mamish. Rashi didn't think that, like, Hashem, like, swooped down with a giant hand to Egypt and, like, everybody jumped on and, I don't know, he took them out. That's preposterous. And you see the other places where Rashi uses the term Yad Mamish. It doesn't mean that. Anyway, again, there's a lot more to talk about. The same thing is true with Tosfos. Tosfos' job is not to deal with philosophical questions, and that's not what interests him. What Tosfos does is he there's this Gemara that says this. There's another Gemara that says something else. He asks the Stira, he gives a Chiluk. He doesn't address outside questions like, but how could this be? Isn't God... That's not the Mahalich of Tosfos. I don't think... So what does that mean? Now, I'm not saying that there is no one who is corporealist. Obviously, the Ravid was referring to someone, and there clearly were. I do think it's pretty telling, and perhaps a reflection of the strength of the Mesorah, that we can't really figure out or point to who the Ravid might have been talking about. So that's not to say that there was nobody who wasn't a corporealist. Surely there were. But I don't think anyone knows who the Ravid was talking about. And there aren't really examples of people who we know of that, at least in a clear-cut and explicit way, do express belief in corporeality. And that being the case, I really do think, and now is not the time to go into it, I do very strongly believe that the almost all Jewish thinkers, certainly post-Rambam and for the most part pre-Rambam, believed in the Ikari Emunah, the Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah, the Rambam. And what seems to be debates about these matters are oftentimes stemming from superficial readings. Now is not the time to go through each of the Ikari Emunah. We could literally spend a whole semester going through each one. Even the one that's probably the most, the one that people, you know, it's most likely was debated, Rambam's belief in not praying to angels, is debatable, because the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah includes a prayer to an angel, Shamuni Shamuni, which obviously demands a more subtle interpretation of the Rambam, assuming he wasn't a violation of his own Ikar Emunah. So that being the case, I think that, like many things, if you learn the sugya carefully and properly, you'll see that really there is very little debate, if perhaps none, about the Rambam's Ikari Emunah, and that they have been largely accepted. And even if we understand, like we saw today from the Radvaz, that at certain points in time, there were great people that debated certain aspects of the Ikari Emunah. These debates have been, in a sense, resolved, and there is no question any longer that these Ikari Emunah are true, and that someone who rejects them is a kofir. Again, leaving aside the issue of Tinok Shenishba, which we've discussed extensively. Be'ezras Hashem, we will continue with a new sugya after winter break. And if anyone has suggestions of things to talk about, I'm very, very happy to hear them. And one second. I'd like to thank all of you for what for me has been a tremendous man. I really do appreciate our discussions and the like. I apologize that I can't always take everybody's questions, but I'm always happy to discuss after class or out of class whatever issues you have. Don't worry too much about the Bechina. Again, the goal is that you have a familiarity with all that we've done. Last night I sent you the Makoros books for all of them. If there are any shiurim you missed, you could hear them online. Take notes. You'll be able to use the Makoros on the Bechina. And I hope, I haven't finished writing my notes yet. Sometimes I get to write the notes before the shiur and sometimes only after. I haven't finished today's yet. But I hope by Motzei Shabbos to send them out to you. And if anybody has any haros also, they would be appreciated. I should all have a lot of atzlacha, so that's going to be this time next week. And please, please, think about the Yom Iyun for 2 weeks. It's really an amazing opportunity. Also, if you know people, perhaps who aren't in this year, who you think would enjoy it and appreciate it and benefit from it, let me know. Or let them know, I guess. And I think it would be great for them to come as well. Yashar Koach, everyone. I'm not speaking.
Who's speaking?